You are listening to Community Radio, WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 in Bangor. Stay tuned for Radioactive.
This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for July 14, 2005, with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. When a press conference was held at Passamaquoddy Tribal offices last week to announce the liquefied natural gas facility proposed for the area was one step closer to being approved, Radioactive was there. Today we'll bring you a report on what really happened at the meeting. We'll also get an update from Lynn Williams, the attorney representing some of the people who have serious concerns about both the LNG facility and the backroom process being used to push its approval.
Last Thursday, the company Quaddy Bay LLC, Pleasant Point Passamaquoddy attorney Craig Francis, and Governor Melvin Francis announced the Bureau of Indian Affairs has approved the lease agreement that would allow for the liquefied natural gas developers to proceed with plans for operations on Passamaquoddy land. They said the decision has been made at the end of May, though Bureau of Indian Affairs says it was June 1st. But attorney Craig Francis said they waited for over a month to announce the approval because of the project's great significance. The only tribal council member present was Hilda Lewis, who opposes the LNG project. She says none of the tribal councilors were informed of the decision until Thursday's public announcement. In fact, she and others were in disbelief of the decision because they had been told by Bureau of Indian Affairs representatives that the decision-making process would take a long time. Present at the press conference were project manager for Quaddy Bay LLC, Brian Smith, president of Quaddy Bay LLC, CEO of Smith Cogeneration, and father of Brian Smith, Donald Smith. He joined the conference partway through. PR organization Savvy and Corporate organized the press conference. Emily Francis, who is the wife of Passamaquoddy attorney Craig Francis, works for Savvy and represented them on Thursday. Today we'll go to some of the more prolonged presentations and discussions at the press conference, and later we'll be speaking with attorney Lynn Williams about proceedings in response to this decision. Governor Melvin Francis opened the press conference. He asked for an elder of the tribe to give a traditional opening blessing, but she, along with a number of other elder women present opposed to the LNG project, refused.
It's been a long haul. It has been a lot of difficulties along the way, and I, for one, if somebody was offended by remarks or what I've done as a tribal administrator, I apologize. But things have to still go on, and today marks another stepping stone for an approval from Bureau of Indian Affairs to accept LNG in Passamaquoddy land. Today I have a couple of colleagues of mine sitting here today that will be explaining and answering any of your questions that you might have in regards to that. Craig Francis went down to Washington, sat down with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and talk to them about what is LNG, what we're trying to do, and the try to get the approval for that. And it did happen, but I guess the one that needs to probably talk more about that would be Craig Francis, to the right of me. With that, I will turn that over to Craig, and he would express how he dealt with the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Thank you, Chief. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome here to the tribal office in Pleasant Point. The purpose of the conference today is really twofold. It's one, to announce that the Bureau of Indian Affairs approved the land lease agreement that the tribe negotiated with Quaddy Bay. And secondly, to have Brian Smith, the project manager of this development, talk about steps moving forward from here. Basically, as you all know, this has been going on for about a year now, and the tribe has gone through several different processes to get where it was. And We negotiated a comprehensive land lease agreement with Quaddy Bay outlining their responsibilities as a tenant and our roles and responsibilities and obligations as a landlord. And since we're dealing with federal Indian land, a reservation, Indian reservation, we had to seek approval from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they wanted to ensure that several requirements were met. The term of the lease, which is 25 years with potential to renew for another 25 years, and they wanted to ensure that we were getting the fair rental value of the land, and with that, they reviewed the document over a week and a half period. I was down there with them, walking them through the process and the stages and the legality of it all, and they approved it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody has from the media.
Questions asked included what BIA requirements were for reviewing cultural and environmental impacts, the reality of exclusion zones around incoming and dock tankers, the impact on fisheries, and the lack of process and transparency on the part of Quaddy Bay LLC and the tribal attorney and governor. There was great question as to why the announcement of the decision had not been made for a month and a week. There was an overwhelming disbelief on the part of Tribal Council member Hilda Lewis that the decision had been made so quickly. She says she was told on June 1st by a Bureau of Indian Affairs representative that the decision had not been made, that two or three people were looking into it, and that it was a long process. On June 25th, she talked in person to the regional director of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Franklin Keel, who BIA says signed the lease agreement. This was at the United Southern and Eastern Tribes semi-annual meeting in Connecticut. He gave no indication that a decision had been made or not. She says she has articulated to the BIA that she has grave concern about the process that has led up to this point, including the fact that tribal council members were not given time to read the lease agreement before they voted. In addition, she says that the tribal-wide referendum vote taken last summer should not be construed as support for building on the newly selected Split Rock site. She asked to be recognized at the press conference.
I have been in touch with the press department of BIA, and they told me that it would take a long process, not this short a time, more than 2 or 3 months. They said probably 6 months when I talked with the trust department. And just to verify, the trust department is a department that scrutinizes everything that comes to the tribe. And I just want to clarify that. Did they approve the application but not the lease agreement?
The lease agreement was already approved by the council. It's just an authorization from the Bureau to accept it.
Okay. I know the council accepted the lease agreement without reading the lease agreement. And I just wanted to know if the Bureau of Indian Affairs approved the lease agreement.
I think they haven't.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
This quickly?
Yes, they did.
That's not how I understood it.
Well, I have a signed copy of the lease agreement from the Bureau, and it's a final approval from the Bureau. And it's an approval of the land lease agreement that we negotiated with Quaddy Bay.
Madonna Soctoma had similar concerns. She is former representative for the Passamaquoddy in the Maine State Legislature. She stood up to speak at the press conference. During her statement, Quaddy Bay LLC project manager Brian Smith whispers to Governor Melvin Francis, quote, "Do you mind if I interrupt her and ask if there's a question?"
Our information is that the land lease has not been fully approved by the BIA. In fact, our attorneys have filed challenges on several levels with the BIA, addressing the proposed lease and waiver of land appraisal. Is Quaddy Bay LLC and Savvy Inc. trying to put a positive spin on this issue to make LNG here at Sibaya attractive and marketable for investors? It's not just a matter of pushing through federal and state permits quickly, and unless the decision-making process includes meaningful public participation, legal challenges shall continue, and we will protect our land and defend our land rights. The May 2018 2000 statement that came from Washington, D.C. by Ms. Darling states that the lease agreement is far from being approved. That was the statement made in May, and you can find that on the website. And I have a copy of it, but I left it at home. There were too many things going on.
If you mind, if I interrupt, this is a press conference. This is for the press. If you have a question, please feel free to ask a question.
Have the respect of Native people and those that are concerned with our land. We are not interested in making it lucrative for investors to think that a lease has been approved by BIA when, in fact, it has not been.
Tribal attorney Craig Francis discusses why he says the BIA process took only 1.5 to 2 weeks instead of the usual months-long process.
The time or the duration it would take to have that approval would depend on the complexity. It would depend on the issues of whether we were complying with the federal regulations. There are a whole host of issues that they look at. And when we took the agreement down, or when I took the agreement down to explain and to go through it with the Bureau, it was a pretty solid agreement. And all of the federal regulations were complied with, and they just wanted to make sure we had, or we negotiated for ourselves, a fair market rental value. And we did. And they also wanted to make sure that there was going to be compliance with NEPA, which is a different process, and it's a more rigorous process through FERC to get a permit to build this, to actually have a license to operate an LNG facility. Totally separate issue. It's one that we are hopeful we can get the approval, but that's really the forum where opponents are going to have to voice their criticisms and opposition. And FERC does listen to what the opponents have to say.
Project manager of Quaddy Bay LLC, Brian Smith.
I'd like to first thank Craig for his hard work down at the BIA. The BIA process can sometimes take a long time, and he took the initiative and the effort to go down and walk the BIA through the land lease agreement, walk them through the process, so they were comfortable with the lease and they were comfortable enough to sign and approve the BIA approval. I'd like to say that we are now on a slightly faster track. We're able to start our front-end engineering and design right now. We're able to start our environmental studies. We're able to start our water suitability analysis, our waterway suitability analysis, our navigational studies, all of which will be required for the second phase. After this huge milestone of passing BIA approval, we have very large milestones to come, one of which is actually submitting applications for all the permits for FERC, and then, of course, obtaining all the permits that are necessary from FERC and other agencies. We will be working closely with FERC, with the Coast Guard, with Transport Canada, in order to ensure the safety and security of this project, while also ensuring that the environment is a primary concern. I'm going to, if you don't mind handing me that, thank you very much. Just going to go through, just so people kind of recognize first, for people that aren't actually from here, this is just a map of a portion of Washington County, which shows the location of Split Rock. As many of you know, we started out with a location that was on Gleason Cove and have since moved it to the Split Rock location where the local government has already approved it. The local community has already voted to approve the project. And we have just recently started our conceptual diagrams of the actual facility so we can now start approaching communities on both sides of the border and start getting input from them while also giving them input on what we're doing to make everybody comfortable with this facility.
The Bangor Daily News reporter asks about the length of time ships are expected to be in the harbor. Because the previous land that Quaddy Bay LLC wanted to lease at Gleason Cove was turned down by the town of Perry, who had annexed the land previously and had a say in commercial development on the site, Quaddy Bay LLC at the last moment turned to the Split Rock site. The site, however, is not big enough to hold tanks and abuts many homes, the school, and the elderly center. Instead, Quaddy Bay LLC has proposed regasifying the LNG at the ship, which would be docked off a half-mile pier off the reservation and pumped into a pipeline. This would require ships to be present for much longer than conventional sites. In the lease, the company could be allowed to expand the project to include tanks on the reservation at a later time. The Bangor Daily News reporter asked about the length of the time ships are expected to be in the harbor. Brian Smith answers.
Brian, what's the length of time we're hearing different times that they're sitting there?
It depends. It depends on throughput. At this point, we don't know what the throughput of the facility is going to be. It will be optimized based on market need, market demand, and economic factors. The facility could be anywhere from half a BCF to 2 BCF per day, and it's difficult to say 3 to 6 days.
Donald Smith, partner and president of Quaddy Bay LLC, also the CEO of Smith Cogeneration out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and father of project manager Brian Smith.
If the plant is running at full output all the time, then we would have a ship at the dock all the time. And if the plant is operating at a BCF, which is the full output for this phase of the plant, it would take 3 days to unload. If we were selling gas more slowly at half a BCF, it would take twice as long. But if it were continuously half a BCF, we'd replace that ship every 6 days. So in the one extreme case, there would be a ship unloading all the time at the pier. And it would be replaced immediately by another ship, like within an hour or two. There's another scenario that Brian was referring to that has to do with peak loads and peak demands on the gas system in New England. And as you know, your needs for natural gas in the wintertime for heating and electricity are very high, and in the summertime are high for electricity to then use for air conditioning. So you have, like a dromedary camel, a two-hump peak throughout the year. And it's possible during the spring and fall, when there's less need for heating or cooling, that the LNG possibly might have a period of not being brought in from abroad. So it's possible there'd be periods of time, weeks or even months, without a tanker here. And it's also possible there'd be a tanker unloading all the time, 24/7, 365. Yes,
the Portland Press Herald, who took part in a telenews conference which Savvy Incorporate and Quaddy Bay LLC did not allow the press present to sit in on, wrote about fishing impacts. Seth Harkness writes, quote, "Fishing grounds would be reduced because national security can require exclusion zones around LNG tankers up to 3 miles long and 1 mile wide. Smith also said the ships would require clearing an 100-yard-wide channel of all lobster traps. He said he was confident the company could make arrangements to minimize conflict with draggers and other mobile gear fishermen. The company expects to draw up contracts to reimburse lobstermen in perpetuity for any loss of fishing grounds to the LNG tankers," Smith said. Quote, "We will compensate lobstermen for loss of their catch in that area forever," he said, end quote. Jeffrey Coombs is from Canada. He's a pastor and makes documentary films. He was present at the press conference.
How much notification would be given of the schedule? For example, if you're mentioning that if it's going to be there for, there could be periods of time where there's always one there.
Right.
Any lobster fishing off of Fairhaven sounds like it wouldn't be able to continue. How much time would the fishermen be given? Because it doesn't, obviously, when you drop a lobster trap, you don't just do it that day. It has to stay for a few days. And so the path going through there. Mm-hmm. So how much notice would the fishermen be given if there's going to be some time where they can actually go and catch lobster?
Two questions here. What is your name, please?
My name is Jeff Combs.
Jeff.
I'm from Deer Island. I'm a filmmaker and pastor.
Wonderful. Great. I heard about you this morning. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Please call me Don.
Okay, sir.
There's two issues here. One is notice of when a ship will transit, and the other is inconvenience or even obstruction of fishing when the ship is in transit. So I'd like to answer both of them.
I would greatly appreciate it.
Okay. And both are really important to us. The first is notice of transit. Part of that is way out of our control. If the country were at a most elevated level of security, national security, then the coming and going of things like ships, including cruise ships, is kept close in. Under normal circumstances, we would probably give at least 24 and more, maybe 48 hours. I've been a little frustrated sometimes when I go to an LNG terminal and say, when's the next LNG ship? And the first guy says, can't tell you. And this guy says, 3 or 4 hours. And it isn't very very firm. But we will have a procedure and process for notifying the community in general, like cruise ships, and affected parties in specific. And if possible, we could even have special notice given. I'll break for your...
John, we only have about 5 minutes.
Okay. It's possible we will have special notice given to regular people using the channel. And I want to mention this. It's really important to us. There are two levels of security we will have for safety of ships. Those are the professional officers on the ships, Coast Guard, pilots, and so on. We're also thinking about having a second level of security, and that's regular people using the waterways. For example, some of the fishermen I know that use it would know way ahead of time if someone unusual is here before the Coast Guard would. And we're thinking about establishing professional relationships with those people and possibly allowing them to have much closer and regular all-time use of the waterways, even when a ship is in transit, because it enhances our security because you know them.
Well, I know time is short. You are aware that where, from what I've heard, is of the proposed path of a tanker coming in is also in the most prolific area of lobstering. And I'll be talking to your son a little bit more about
right.
that.
Right. Let me give you a general answer.
Yeah.
We will compensate.
But they're fishermen. They want to fish.
Let me finish.
Sorry,
please.
I don't mean to be argumentative.
We will compensate anyone who loses revenue from fishing as a result of our activities. We have negotiated an agreement with some of the fishermen on this side of the bay. It has not been signed, but the details have been negotiated and generally accepted, and we would do the same on the other side. So there is no way you can do something big without some impact on someone. And to the extent that lobstermen are in effect prohibited from using a portion of the area and their livelihood is impacted, we will compensate them.
And I'd also like to point out that through the existing passage, ships are already transiting. They're transiting 650-foot ships. 850-foot ships have frequently transited in the past.
But they don't stop the lobstering that are coming through. Are you talking about the ships that are currently coming through?
Yes.
Yeah, but they don't have to pull their tracks up because they don't have any tugs coming through. And so when I've been talking to the lobster fishermen, I'm not a fisherman. I'm just their pastor. But when I've been talking to them, they're aware of all these ships coming through, but it doesn't have the near any of the impact of what it would have for where they've been fishing for generations. And you mentioned there's a bit of give and take with this. And as far as from what I've been hearing from the fishermen on Deer Island, it seems a lot more take and not even an asking.
Well, there hasn't been, as far as I know, you're correct.
Okay.
There's not been communication with the fishermen there. There has been here. And I've already communicated our policy. Could we go to the next question? We've only got a few minutes left. Yes, ma'am.
You said that you have negotiated with some of the local fishermen?
That's right.
Who?
I'd rather not keep their names in the public, but I'll tell you after the meeting. Other questions? I apologize for getting here late myself, and I'd like to take this opportunity. I haven't seen Melvin for many weeks and ages, and I want to thank him and the Tribal Council for their excellent work in negotiating and approving the contract, especially Craig's work with the BIA that gave extraordinary attention and approval to this document.
Tribal Council Member Hilda Lewis makes some clarifying points about the PR organization Savvy and Corporate's affiliation and last summer's referendum vote.
And I have a question for Mel.
Right.
May I ask you, Mel? I just want to clarify a couple of things.
Yes.
It keeps mentioning in the newspapers that Savvy is working for us, the tribe. I thought they were working for 40 Bay LLC.
They are.
They are. Okay. Clarified one point. The other point that I want to mention is that it keeps the newspapers, you know, they get things wrong all the time, but they keep saying that the tribe has approved this. Not all of the tribe has approved this. Many changed their minds after the site was changed because it was going to be put on ceremonial grounds. And so if the vote was taken today, I can bet you anything that they would be against it. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
An archaeological survey required by the Historic Preservation Act to assess cultural and archaeological impacts is currently underway for the Split Rock site. The conclusions apparently will be taken into account during the FERC process, not by the BIA. The same is the case with environmental studies. Bureau of Indian Affairs spokesperson Nedra Darling had to reschedule two previously arranged interviews this week with us. We'll be talking with her early next week.
Attorney Lynn Williams represents some of the many Passamaquoddy people who oppose the LNG project. Last week on Radioactive, she outlined some of the concerns they have about the lease, concerns that she had outlined in a letter that she sent to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Lynn Williams joins us by phone today to give us an update. Welcome back, Lynn.
Thank you. Thank you.
Has there been any response from BIA?
There has been no response. We have still received no written notification, even that the lease was signed, much less information about how to appeal, which they are required to do. BIA just hasn't done it.
Now, originally there was concern because it appears that there was only 30 days given for an time to file an appeal to the decision made, and 30 days had passed, but then you had found a stipulation within a code section that there needs to be some sort of written approval by the decision makers?
That's right. The Code of Federal Regulations specifies that when a decision is made by the agency, in this case the BIA, they are required to notify all known interested parties. Certainly they knew that Hilda Lewis was a known interested party because on May 31st, she spoke with the with a person in the regional office at length about her objections. I submitted a letter on June 6th on behalf of my clients objecting to the waiver of appraisal, so they knew about us also. None of us received notice, and so it's my opinion that we received, quote, notice on the day of the press conference and that the 30 days would start from that time.
But it is possible, if you wanted to think in conspiracy terms, that the announcement may have been some people are speculating that the announcement may have been delayed for beyond the 30 days for that reason.
Yes.
That
yes.
The approval was done, and then they waited longer than 30 days to make the announcement, hoping that perhaps the appeal would not be a route that could be taken because the 30 days had expired.
Yes. And, in fact, there was a statement. I don't know who made it. I wasn't at the press conference, but I read it in one of the articles that essentially said, well, we waited the 30 days, and now the appeals process is over.
Hmm. And, Lynn, quickly, in the last couple of minutes we have, and we'll have you on again when we do talk with the BIA representative, where do you go from here with the legal proceedings?
Well, we are trying to determine there is an administrative appeal to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Indian Appeals Court. We are trying to ascertain whether that is mandatory, meaning we must do that first before going to federal court, or whether it's discretionary. If it's discretionary, we will skip that, and within the next 30 days, we will be filing a suit against BIA directly in federal court.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll be talking with you again, Lynn Williams.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown. Joel Mann engineered today's program. Andy Buckley sometimes does web and technical support.
You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@mainindymedia.org. Listen and download. Our website is radioactivenews.org.
Thanks for listening and acting. Stay tuned for more independent news on your community radio station, WERU, and join us again next Thursday at 4 for Radioactive.